come out if we are to understand the pattern that we are gathered here to explore, because the pattern is larger than federal health agencies and the COVID cartel. If we do zoom out and ask, what are they hiding? The answer becomes as obvious as it is disturbing. They are hiding everything. It will be jarring for many to hear a scientist speak with such certainty. It should be jarring. We are trained to present ideas with caution, as hypotheses in need of a test. But in this case, I have tested the idea, and I am as certain of it as I am of anything. We are being systematically blinded. It is the only explanation I have encountered that will not only describe the present, but also, in my experience, predicts the future with all but perfect accuracy. The pattern is a simple one. You can see it clearly and test it yourself. Every single institution dedicated to public truth-seeking is under simultaneous attack. They are all in a state of collapse. Every body of experts fails utterly. Individual experts who resist, or worse, in an attempt to return their institutions to sanity, they find themselves coerced into submission. If they won't buckle, they are marginalized or forced out. Those outside of the institutions who either seek truth alone or who build new institutions with a truth-seeking mission face merciless attacks on both their integrity and expertise, often by the very institutions whose mission they refuse to abandon. There is a saying in military circles, once is a mistake, twice is a coincidence, three times is enemy action. I have no doubt that given an hour, the people on this panel could point to 100 examples of the pattern I have just described, while finding even a handful of exceptions would pose a significant challenge. We are left in a fool's paradise. Our research universities spend huge sums of public money to reach preordained conclusions. Professors teach only lessons that are consistent with wisdom students have picked up on TikTok, even when those lessons contradict the foundational principles of their disciplines. Once proud newspapers like the New York Times and Washington Post only report important stories after they have become common knowledge. Morticians must now raise the alarm over patterns missed by medical examiners. The CDC has become an excellent guide to protecting your health, but only for people who realize you should do the opposite of whatever it advises. The courts, the last holdout in this ongoing inversion of reality, are now regularly used as a coercive weapon of elites against those who threaten them. We have literally witnessed the Department of Homeland Security attempt to set up a truth ministry and declare accurate critique of government as a kind of terrorism. To my fellow patriots in the West, the pattern is unmistakable. I cannot tell you with any certainty who they are or what they hope to accomplish, but I can tell you that we are being systematically denied the tools of enlightenment and the rights guaranteed in our Constitution. Those who remain dedicated to the values of the West must fight this battle courageously, and we must win. For if we do not stem the tide, the result will be a dark age that differs from prior dark ages only in the power and sophistication of the coercive instruments wielded by those who will rule us.
Okay, I started that because we're going to talk about this now. Okay, so we're going to start, post this interview now, because in Alabama it's 8 o'clock in the evening, so hopefully they can watch it, and we'll watch it here, and I'll restream this later. So we did this interview with Richard Hirschman, who's a mortician in Alabama. I found it profoundly disturbing. so disturbing that we have to post it. So I don't really like selling fear, but this is, I know other people are talking about this too, but here we go. Prepare yourselves. What? Why are you looking? I just say to Dr. Easterhouse. Why are you looking? I just say to Dr. Easterhouse, if it's allowing blood to flow, then it's kind of hiding in the body, which is parasitic like. So it's growing in the body, and the fact that it grew after the body means that there's something making it grow. So I know people saying it's not a life force. Could it be some sort of life form, only theorizing, that we've never seen before?
Blood in here. Could be wrong. Oh no, there it is. Pulling it.
This is the jugular vein.
Of what they said, or of what other people might think. If you're still blind, then there really must be something wrong. 'Cause when you wear that mark, you've got my sympathy. You must be really sick or really cowardly to be a symbol of compliance from the consummate slave, broadcasting your fear for it to spread and propagate. When you wear that mark, it's not to drive an insane. You must have left your testes at the rainbow parade as a symbol of compliance from the consummate slave, broadcasting your fear for it to spread and propagate. When you wear that mark, when you wear that mask, when you wear that mask, when you wear that.
But
with the
and we're done. Here we are. We have Richard Hirschman. Now I believe you're in Utah
or Alabama. Ohio?
Alabama.
Alabama.
That was my fourth choice. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, just to say, how long have you lived in Alabama? You born there? You born and bred?
No, I was born up in Minnesota. And I've been living in Alabama since 1997.
What do you like about Alabama? Just because, I mean, it's great sounding. Americans have great sounding names, but it's what do you like about it, you know? They all sound like a country western song.
Right. Well, Sweet Home Alabama. I mean, that's the old country song. I love the weather. It does get hot here. We're in southeast Alabama near the panhandle of Florida, not too far from the Gulf of Mexico. I love the winters. Yeah, I grew up where, you know, we have blizzards and snow and 20 degrees below zero in the wintertime. And here in Alabama, if it gets 20 degrees, it's freezing cold for us. But it's nice not being slipping on ice all the time in the winter.
Absolutely.
And what made you become an embalmer out of all the things you can do in life? What attracted you to becoming an embalmer?
Well, I never thought about being a mortician at all. But my wife got involved in a job where she was selling cemetery spaces and funeral prearrangements. And it's the idea is to go ahead and plan your services before you're sick or before you die. And that way, when you do die, your family already has an idea what you want to be done with you. Yeah. After your death. And so I got involved in doing that, quit my job, and then got involved in sales. And that got me in the funeral home. And I was exposed to preparing bodies and doing funerals and decided to become a funeral director and an embalmer.
So that didn't freak you out when you first saw your dead body? You went like going, oh my God, or you actually thought, wow.
I wasn't really freaked out. It was a little strange. It was unusual, but I have a pretty strong faith. I've always looked at, you know, we live beyond this world that we're in. But it was definitely a new experience, to say the least.
Yeah. Was it like 6 feet under? You remember that great show?
I do remember the show. There's some things about that show that were kind of there, but you know, it's not exactly like that. It is different. That show was popular about the time that I got involved in this line of work.
Wow. Yeah, it's quite a while ago now. Several years ago for me. So here you are. You're a mortician in Alabama, and then suddenly you're coming across what you just showed us. Then your little jar of calamari.
Yeah, and I've got several of them. Each one from a different person, of course. You know, some of them have a little bit more blood. These are a couple other ones. And I've collected probably now It's easy. I stopped counting at 100. So I've probably collected almost 200 of these samples that I've been providing doctors and scientists, and trying to give it to people that I'm hoping that can take this message further than I can go in order to get research done on this.
What was it like with the first time you discovered them?
Well,
you wouldn't have had any idea what it was. I mean, well, no one did. You know?
No, I didn't know what it was either. In early 2021, the death rate was started going up quite drastically, and the clotting issues got really, really bad. But then sometime in the first few months, I usually estimate by May, but it might have been a little bit earlier, maybe in March or April, but it was definitely no later than June. I was noticing these white fibrous, these clots were not just blood clots anymore. They were like this white strands. Now, this is one clot. It's about 27 inches long. And these clots were highly unusual, but the first time I saw it, I thought, wow, that's weird. Never seen anything like it. And if I recall, I was having problems embalming an arm. And so I had to raise the artery in the arm to, inject my fluid to the hand. And, when I cut the artery, I noticed there was something in the artery. And I pulled it out, and I was floored. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then, you know, continued on seeing more and more clotting. And as the summer of 2021 was going on, I was seeing this more and more. I started asking other embalmers that are around my area and people that I know. Some of them were in the funeral home with me that are 50 years of experience. And, they had never seen anything like it either. And then in late September of 2021 is when I took the first picture of what I was seeing. And that kind of started the journey of me documenting the things that I was seeing. Because talking to people about blood clots was one thing, but showing them what I was seeing was something totally different. And I had a doctor's appointment in... I don't remember when it was, probably in October of 2021. And I only had three pictures on my phone, and I showed it to my doctor, who was shocked by it, actually called in another doctor to come in and look at these fascinating images. Neither one of them could explain what it was. And then he wanted me to get my COVID vaccine because he said it was 95% effective. And, 6 months later, I go back to him again, and he's like, hey, I was thinking about you. What's going on with the clot stuff that you were finding? I showed him even more pictures and a couple of small videos, and he shakes his head. He just can't understand what it is. And again, he wants me to get my COVID vaccine. And then 6 months later, I go to him a third time, and again, he brings it up. And I showed him these images. I showed him all this stuff. I showed him the text messages that I have received from pathologists that I was talking to and that were investigating this. And he got into this. I could tell there was something going on between this person that was working with him, taking notes. Anyway, he changed the subject, told me, not only do I need to get the new bivalent vaccine and COVID vaccine, I also needed to get the new shingles vaccine. And he said, and if you get the shingles vaccine, you'll have a 97% chance you'll never get shingles. And I said, you mean kind of like what they said about the COVID vaccine? He said, they never said that you wouldn't get COVID if you got the vaccine. I said, are you kidding me? The president himself said that. And his nurse that was sitting in the office, I could see her in the corner of my eye almost laughing because she knew he was lying. He was lying to me. So that's the last time I went to the doctor. In a sense, you could say I fired him, but you know, whatever. I just don't go no more because I don't trust him. How can I trust my doctor who will tell me this stuff when he told me that it was 95% effective? I lost my my respect and my faith. And what's messed up? He actually convinced me, Michael, years ago to start taking the flu vaccine every year. And I wished I never did that, but it's too late now. I can't undo the flu vaccines that he's given me. Now, when COVID came and all of us, this stuff that I'm seeing, I wouldn't get any more vaccines, and I sure wasn't going to get the COVID vaccine because I was afraid it was linked to these strange things we were seeing in bodies.
Mm. It's what are the pathologists said?
Well, one of them said that they're full of eosinophils and I think he said neutrophils is way too cellular. He said there was some, it looked like there was some revascularizing channels starting to try to push their way through these things. But, you know, I'm not a pathologist, so I don't even understand what all that means.
Well, that's why we've got Muggins down below. I'll put him up here. Come on, Paul, explain to us what he just said to us. No sound. You're muted.
Yes, I am muted. You know, I find it amazing that pathologists haven't examined it properly. I mean, the pathologist that you've sent it to, I presume, are people like Dr. Ryan Cole.
Correct.
You know, there are a few. You know, one of the tricks here is that they haven't been examining this phenomena. You know, it's gobsmacking that it falls on people like yourself to note these clots and ask these questions. Now, there are lots of different theories about what's causing it. It's a type of polymerization of fibrin, which is a natural clotting protein in the body. I've been recently looking at, and I know people like Dr. Jessica Rose early on talked about amyloid protein and particularly prion protein, you know, proteins that cause infectious misfolding, so you only need one misfolded protein, and then in an infectious way, you get more and more of this polymer, if you like, or sheets of protein. But what's different about it is the body doesn't know how to break this stuff down. It doesn't have a mechanism to break it down, which is why it builds up, and you see it in things like Jakob Creutzfeldt disease, and in the case of mad cow disease was a form of prion disease. So the difference between amyloid and prion is prions cause this infectious like behavior in the nearby proteins, whereas amyloid is this sort of polymer that builds up, that can build up, but it doesn't have this element of converting, if you like, the nearby proteins into the same misfolded protein. I've read people have analyzed it and found unusual concentrations of elements like tin.
You tin? Know?
Yeah.
What tin?
Yeah, you know. So it's not. And I followed Chris Martinson for a long time, and Chris is Dr. Chris is he's got a pathology background, and he did when we first noticed these clots, we had to go back and go, look, this isn't the sort of clots that you see. You've got antemortem, as in before you die, and postmortem clots, and the postmortem clots, they tend to be, you know, that's because the circulation stops. So you get this sort of red currant jelly type appearance. It's very different. And the stuff that forms antemortem, it has a different appearance. It's a characteristic appearance. You know, you can look at it on the microscope. It's a bit like, you know, You can see layers of deposition over time and what have you. And what this is fascinating. It's new, and it just happened to hit in 2021, from what you're saying, Richard. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct, Dr. Paul. And you, listen, I'm not trying to sound like I'm smarter than you or anything like that. But understand, I'm working with people that are investigating this too. You have hit almost every element that I've been hearing from these other people researching. Polymerization, amyloid.
What is polarization? What is that?
It's like plastic.
In this interview, he's the brains and I'm the looks. So I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. So like when you make in plastic is a mix of certain chemicals and they kind of bind together. It's a process of them coming together to form the plastic. You got all these different ingredients.
Okay.
And then once it starts to settle and cool, it starts to form into the solid plastic that you see. Now, I know we're not talking about plastics, but the researchers that I've been working with are discussing this. And they told me in the beginning that they believe these are both antemortem and postmortem. And I'm just an embalmer. How am I supposed to know if it's ante or post? Every clot that I've ever dealt with in the past is red. Now, granted, like Dr. Paul said, under a microscope, you'll be able to see the lines of Zion, these layering effects where you might see these different layers. But to the naked eye, it's red. It looks like jelly. And that's what we've been used to in the funeral business. But there's a lot of elements going on here. And these different amyloid-like proteins, which an amyloid protein is nothing more than a misfolded protein, a protein that's out of shape, it's out of whack, it's not normal, and so you have enzymes in your body that bind to different things and it helps break things down, and that's how your body needs to clot, otherwise you'll bleed to death. But then you also have to have the enzymes to come in and break these clots down and move it away. And I kind of look at it, I remember in biology class in mortuary school, which is way, way, way below what Dr. Paul probably knows. But we looked at the embalming process, which your interview that you did with that undertaker or that funeral director a while back, which I just listened to it again. When we were in school, when we're embalming the body, we're replacing the blood with a chemical, typically formaldehyde, and that formaldehyde denatures the proteins that are in the body so that it slows down decomposition. And the best example that I remember hearing was when you take an egg, like you're going to fry an egg, you crack the egg and you put it into just a glass, you're going to see that clear white liquid. And you got the yellow yolk, correct? But what happens when you put it on that hot frying pan? What happens to that clear liquid? It starts to turn into a solid. It polymerizes in a sense. Those proteins become misfolded and they change shape. When we're embalming, that's what we're doing with the body. These chemicals change the proteins so that it slows down the enzymes to break it down, to slow down decomposition. And this is what's going on. And these clots, and I have some here, Dr. Paul, and I don't know if you realize this, this right here formed post-mortem. It's very similar.
All of it. All of it.
Yeah, all of this formed post-mortem. And the only reason why I know this is because it formed outside of the body. I see Dr. Paul turning his head to the side saying, well, how is that possible? And I wouldn't have known this except, and I'm going to see if I can pick up an image here and so I can show it to you. Now, this is a an image that was taken offline. Okay, so this is not the person I embalmed the body. But what you see there are these large tubes. You see the large tubes?
Yeah.
All right. So what I believe, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty certain, was this person was hooked up to an ECMO circuit. And an ECMO circuit, which looks like this, and I'm going to describe it to you. There was one of these large tubes that went into the neck, and then it went along the body, and they had those like straps holding it to the body so that it wouldn't be flopping all over. And it was super long. It went all the way down almost to the ankles. Well, there was another one that went into the body in the groin area. And so what I understand is this was hooked up to an ECMO device, which pumps the blood, helps pump the blood from the body, runs it through an oxygenator, and then it pumps that blood back into the body. It's usually used on people that are extremely ill and they're in bad shape. They're really in bad shape. It's almost like a bypass machine. Well, when this individual died, what I assumed happened, they simply unplugged the tubes from the machine and they connected them back together. That way, the person's blood just didn't run all over the place and leak everywhere. So they closed it off. Inside of those tubes that went from here all the way down towards the feet, the blood separated. There were low areas that were really dark and black, like the black stuff you see on those clots. And then there was areas that was almost like a golden color. When I moved the tubes, there was hardly no movement at all. When I started the embalming process, I simply unplugged the tube and the black stuff that was at the low end started coming out, looked like jello. It was solid. It was a typical blood clot. I tried to grab some. Guess what? It fell apart in my hand, which is what a typical blood clot would do. But when the yellow stuff started coming out, this came out with it. These clots. Now, at the end of the cannula, I'm going to show you a picture of what it looks like. Looks similar to this. It had these little, there's little tiny holes in there. That clot is too big to pass through those tiny holes. So my mind says it's impossible for that clot to have entered into that tube, just like it would be impossible for that clot to exit out of that tube. When that person died, those tubes were probably just full of blood. And as that person sat and went into cold storage for almost 2 days before I had permission to embalm the body, that clot formed inside of that tube. Now, this tells me something very important, and Dr. Paul probably, it might help other doctors wake up and say, wait a minute, I already know that these clots are forming in living people as well. We've had families that have shared with us that their loved one had a surgery where they removed a clot and they said the clot was not red. It looked like calamari and the person was alive. So that's not a postmortem clot. We also have Dr. Philip McMillan, who spoke, who had a whistleblower recently, who worked in a cath lab. They're removing these rubber, whitish looking clots from living people. So we know they're anti-mortem as well. I'm guessing, and this is my thought, the reason why myself and other embalmers noticed something early is because we deal with the blood on a regular basis. The doctors don't drain blood. So when that blood stops moving, some polymerization or condensation or precipitation is taking place at a rapid rate, causing these things to happen. So my mind says, and a lot of these other doctors, and it's, these are some form of proteins that are in a soluble state in the blood floating around until something happens, and I don't know exactly what it is, while they're alive and they can form, or when their blood stops moving, you set up the stage for these things to condense together and precipitate out of the blood. I like to look at it like the cement truck as it's running down the street is constantly turning, keeping that cement from turning into a brick. Once you pour that into the foundation and you let it sit there for a little bit, it turns into a block of concrete. These things used to not happen. Either way, antemortem or postmortem, I think what we morticians are seeing is simply, this is nothing more than the evidence that something's in the blood that ought not to be there. And exactly what it is, that is the million-dollar question. And some of these scientists and researchers I'm dealing with, they're saying or they're believing this is a result of the spike protein, but it's not just spike protein. Some of them are telling me that when they utilize the mRNA, some of them will say COVID itself might be somewhat responsible because it has spike protein as well. However, with the vaccine, they're saying that it's not just spike protein. When they use that pseudouridine in the mRNA thing, they to make this body create spike protein, they change the chain of RNA, and we're possibly getting aberrant proteins, unintended proteins that ought not to be there. So are we looking at abnormal proteins? It may be a combination of homeostasis is out of balance. Maybe there's too much fibrin, too much fibronectin, too much of whatever protein in the blood that's out of balance, and plus possibly additional proteins. And when the blood stops moving, these things are forming, which would sound the alarm to us morticians, which is one of the reasons why I was very concerned in the beginning, as I'm seeing this clotting issue just go from, you know, every once in a while to almost everybody now I embalm has got some kind of a clotting issue going on. Something has to be causing it. What's that?
Literally everybody you embalm now has these things in it.
Not everybody that I embalm has these in them. Prior to 2021, I would say 10-15%. Okay, maybe 20%. Some embalmers say maybe 30% of the bodies would have clotting issues. So that's like saying 3 out of 10 bodies, you might run into blood clots, typical blood clots like we've always had. What I'm now seeing is that I'm lucky to have 10 or 15% of the bodies I embalm with no clots. Now, these major clots, these that I'm showing you here, is easy 50% of the bodies. So we have a lot of bodies that have these abnormal whitish strands. We also have a good portion that has just excessive clotting, more than we've used to see, but I'm not going to tell you 100%, you know, it's the exact same. I label them different on my computer to try to keep track. I have, if there's no color on it at all, there's no clots. If it's in yellow, it's saying, hey, there's some clotting here. It could be abnormal, but I'm not going to say 100% it's abnormal, because now after 3 years of this, I almost have a hard time knowing what normal is anymore. But then I have it labeled in orange, where it's more like this kind of stuff. It has the signs of the white fibrous material in that blood. If that makes sense to you.
I would have thought that the pathologists who are doing the autopsies, who are doing the routine autopsies, they must be seeing this too. and they're just not saying anything. We know that they desperately avoid doing the appropriate histochemistry, you know, testing for spike protein, testing, staining the cells so you can see the white cell infiltrates that happen, say, in myocarditis, you know. And there seems to be a deliberate and global policy to gag and blind and pathologists. So you've only got this tiny number, you know, Arne Burkhardt, who did the German pathologist who did the pioneering work. And we've had this protocol now for years. I told Steve Kirsch about it at the end of 2021. Because, you know, we're all siloed a little bit. You know, the Americans don't know what the Europeans are doing. Australians are separated from the Canadians. But that those barriers are breaking down. But we still, it gobsmacks me that you're not the only one seeing this. You know, we're seeing it around the world. Like you say, it's happening ante-mortem, which means before death, in living people. This conspiracy of silence can't, you know, either you're positing that this is that we're making this up, or we're looking at a new phenomena. And a lot of people have been studying it, and like you say, there are different explanations in the chemistry, like the role of the spike protein and how it changes the chemistry. So when I went to medical school, we had lectures on clotting and the coagulation system. This is a whole new chapter that isn't being taught, that needs to be taught in the medical schools if we're going to be treating patients appropriately.
Yes. It's interesting, the chemistry. Now, one of the people that has been investigating this, believe it or not, he's not a medical doctor, but he's a polymer chemist. And this chemist looked at Mike Adams' analysis, ICP-MS, where they found the high levels of tin and phosphorus, or not phosphorus, but the different elements. He, looking at it as on a chemistry level alone, just chemistry, is understanding why tin is such an important thing. And it has to do a lot with the ingredients that is publicly known of what has gone into the vaccine. They utilize a phospholipid thing in order to put in this pseudouridine and all this stuff. And he's saying what's actually happening is we've set up the stage for this polymerization to occur on a chemical level. Tin naturally binds to certain elements, and other elements naturally bind to phosphorus. And it's you got to look at it almost on a chemistry level to understand that. And that's why he said he believed in early on that he believed these were both antemortem and postmortem. I believe they continue to grow after death. And I think instead of saying grow, they continue to form, because people want to say, oh, this is a living parasite. I'm not saying it's a living anything. I'm just saying this stuff is forming.
I don't know if you've once seen it's come out. It's moved around. I saw Alien. I've seen it. I just, you know.
No, I have not had one bite me yet, nor wrap itself around my finger.
Burst out of a chest and sort of look around and take off. I mean, it's scary. We're laughing at it, but this is, you know, science should be excited that they've got something new, not trying to silence the fact. You know, this is like, oh my God, look at this. You know, we've never seen this before in medical science. And instead, it's silence. It's just,
it is interesting.
You know, it's a nanotechnology as well. I'm glad, I think it's really appropriate that people like who have expertise in polymer chemistry, we're going to need all sorts of people to unravel what's going on here. I've recently been looking at some of the some papers are on amyloid and using the internet of bio nano things, you know, how you can get, you can develop currents and make sensors out of these amyloid and prion like molecules. So this rabbit warren can run very, very deep, and hints at a purpose. This may not be random at all. It may be by design, and what we're seeing, and we're just scratching. We're just scratching the beginnings of it, because, like I say, nanotech toxicology and genetic therapy as a side product, a side form of nanotoxicology, it just isn't anything we've had to deal with.
Do you know where you can find a product that has genuine testimonials from 6 Aussie CrossFit champions and that has helped one boxing coach create 3 Australian champions and 1 Oceania champion in just over a year, and that has helped ordinary people go better in life? A big bottle of our oxygen will last you 4 to 6 weeks. Give it a solid go for 3 weeks, then see how you're feeling. I think you'll want to reorder before you run out. This has been Terry from Go to Life.
In our training and in our past, and we can't even get them to do simple bloody slides with staining using techniques that we've had around for 100 years, let alone starting to look at it. But at some point, if we want to survive as a species, and if we want to find ways that we can help people who have been affected, we'll have to dig deep. And at the moment, it's still very much, nothing to see here. Safe and effective, safe and effective.
I've been looking at the monkeys.
These are my monkeys.
They've got a COVID inquiry in the parliament over here. Those 3 monkeys are in charge of that one as well. There's a, what's it like in Alabama? I mean, how, because it's just great to hear, like, I'm from Melbourne. And Melbourne, we just went full North Korea. In fact, North Korea sort of looked at us and went, whoa, hey,
we're not that crazy.
Yeah, that's right. What was it like in Alabama?
We had lockdowns. They closed down businesses over here. They wanted people wearing masks for a while. And it shocked me a little bit, because we're considered a pretty conservative state, and yet we still followed a lot of the craziness, but not to the extent of California, New York, Michigan, some of these more liberal states, which took a long time for them to come back to a halfway decent normal life, but. People are waking up around here. It's I can't say they're fully awake yet. I don't know. I know that the majority of the people that I do work for, they pull me to the side and say, Richard, I'm really proud you're speaking out. I'm glad you're out there making the public aware of what's going on. Now, some of these people are vaccinated themselves. They see exactly what I see. They know. And they're hoping that by me speaking out and talking to these different doctors and scientists and getting this stuff out, that eventually we're going to get to the bottom of what it is. Now, we might not be able to stop the body from making these. Genetic therapy is genetic therapy. I don't know how you would turn it off, but if we can't turn it off, and if we can identify what these proteins are, then I'm hoping that they'll have some form of medications in order to introduce enzymes into the body that are safe for the body to help break these things down in order to keep them in check. which is my hope from the beginning, that we find something to do, because I can't say these clots killed somebody, Michael. All I can say is these clots are there. And if they're there in all of these bodies, my inner spirit says, without this substance in their body, would they have lived longer? Now, that's a question I can't 100% answer. But if something's wrong with the blood itself, if there's these foreign proteins floating around, is that the underlying cause of so many different varieties of side effects from the vaccine, from mental cloudiness to difficulty breathing to rapid cancers to, of course, there's lots and lots of reports of people having blood clots. I mean, I've never in my life heard of so many stories of people with blood clots. It blows my mind. I know blood clots have always existed. I get it, but not at the rate we're seeing them now. So I'm just saying something's wrong with the blood.
I interviewed a guy in Queensland here, and he's got one from his toe right the way up to his thigh, just the one single. So it must be one of these things. Yeah. They haven't removed it. They're just trying to break it down, but nothing's working, and his legs becoming ulcerous, and the doctor's just not that interested. But I think they're more scared. Like, if they deal with it, then the authorities might come and go, what are you doing? You know, you can't bring this to awareness. And this poor old guy just took the vaccine because he thought he should do the right thing, and his entire life's been destroyed, and now he's just basically left to die, you know?
I remember
that's how we're here.
I remember seeing this camera vision, like a thermograph, it's called. So you can get the infrared, and this perfectly normal looking person, asymptomatic, and these patches, cold spots where their circulation wasn't happening. And it's chilling, you know, to think that there are people walking around where bits and pieces of their circulation is turning on and off. And there's no way that that's compatible with good health.
You know, I'm glad you bring that up, Dr. Paul, because a lot of times when we were dealing with, let's say somebody died and they had a DVT, a deep vein thrombosis, we could usually in the embalming room tell that they were having an issue with circulation in this leg because it becomes ulcerous. It becomes swollen, it's discolored, all of that. When I'm finding on these strange clots, the body looks totally normal most of the time. There's no sign of swelling, no sign of necrosis in the toes, which would mean there's no circulation getting down there. So the blood's
flying through them.
What's that?
So the blood is flowing through them? Is that what's happening? They're not actually stopping the blood?
Right. Now let me go ahead and give you an example here. I'm going to take this ink pen. Okay. So if this is your vessel and this is the clot and it's in there, there's still room for blood to move around. It's not totally. But now if you take it and it gets to the point where it's like that,
yeah.
Now, very little, if any, blood can go through there. Now you're in deep, deep trouble. I think some of these clots that are forming. Did you see the video that I posted on X with me pulling it out of that jugular vein?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll replay that in this thing. Yeah.
I've already squeezed it. very much like a rubber band.
Have you always wanted to grow your own food, but you're not quite sure where to start? The Survival Seed Tin from Survival Seeds Australia holds 25 different varieties of vegetables and herbs. These seeds are heirloom variety, non-GMO, and on the back of each packet is a helpful growing guide. Suitable for all four seasons here in Australia, you can tap the link below and get growing today.
If it's allowing blood to flow, then it's kind of...
Bear with me as I try to figure out where we went.
Which is
behaving in a
and trained pathologist that have
mount.
We need to come to it on their level to where we can understand it equally, and then I agree with Dr. Paul here. And as they investigate it further, let them start to realize the nano size part of it that is maybe intentional, like almost the synthetic biology, which like Anna Mahalcha talks about, Karen Kingston, and many others. I think it's all connected. But in order to work together, we have to try to make it simple. And a lot of the people, probably Michael, you're like me. I mean, you know, we're not doctors or scientists. We see things, we perceive things. It looks like it's growing. It must be a parasite. It looks like it's a worm, or it's some kind of an alien creature growing inside of our body. I get it 100%. What I think, you know, what matters is, you know, what people see. And if that causes people to open up their mind and go like, holy crap, what is it? They're going to demand answers. And eventually, my hopes is that the scientists and doctors will work together and find out what those answers are. This is an image of chicken fat clots.
Okay.
They're orange. They look like literally like if you're frying getting ready to fry some chicken, and you know how that little bit of fatty stuff up underneath the skin, that's what it looks like. And we see that sometimes that comes out from the vein. And I think that's what you maybe call a fatty embolus or something like that.
Richard, am I right in saying that there was a progression from coffee ground type stuff before, and then the more and more organized clots sort of came further over time?
Well, okay, so not always do I see these large clots. Sometimes I see what I call dirty blood. It's stringy. It's just nasty. It's not your typical jelly looking clot. It's stringy and dirty. And then sometimes we're seeing it literally looks like fine grains of sand. And
so this is new as well. You haven't seen this before?
Not like this. So here's an image, and you'll notice, look how it looks like there's residue left on the table.
Wow.
Small little pieces. Now, it doesn't take much of something like that in order to probably cause some serious issues. Here's another image. I'm going to try to zoom in. You know, you see the blood looks dirty. Oh, yeah. It's granular. This is one of those things that happens, but not all the time.
What's that?
Here's an image of a normal blood clot.
Yeah.
That looked like a blood clot to you, Dr. Paul?
Yes, yes.
When the blood sticks together, when it loses its, polarization, whatever, when it sticks together, they got a name for that. It stacks up.
of rouleau. That's on
rouleau.
On a microscope.
Yeah.
Because normally the red cells will push apart from one another.
Yeah, like batteries.
It's not a natural thing for them to look like a stack of coins.
Would that explain the dirty blood?
There's some dirty blood mixed in there with some white ones.
Man.
Right. Now, just in this thing here, just in this folder I have on my phone, it says 256 images and 13 videos. Now think about if I was seeing something that was an extremely rare event, then how is it possible that I could have this much on my phone?
Exactly.
Richard, exactly. You have to disbelieve your lying eyes and your lying.
Join the monkeys.
I mean, that's it. You know, it's like we're either this is real or it's not. A lot of us are seeing stuff and we're being told, we're being gaslit, we're being told, no, you're not seeing excess deaths. Everything's fine. Look, the UK just redid the numbers and the deaths are going down.
Less deaths. They figured out how to count them differently. Yeah, they count them like the monkeys.
I'm waiting for them to redefine death. You know, the people are not dying. They're just... It's hypersleep, you know, or I don't know. They'll find another word. Thank you. We had John O'Looney on 2 years ago now. What you guys is important.
It'd be great to get you two together. That'd be a hell of a show. He's a great guy.
It would be great. Yeah, you can. He's a hero. Interview that you did, I saw that interview with that Undertaker in where was
Launceston.
He?
Launceston. Launceston.
Tasmania.
It's in Tasmania.
Tasmania, yeah, right. I just learned this recently, speaking with another mortician from New Zealand and listening to him, he said, he's only embalmed he only recalls like two bodies out of 30 years that's been embalmed. I didn't realize how embalming was so rare in some of the different areas of the world. And here in America, it's been fairly common. I mean, we've been doing it on a regular basis for a long, long time. But I was speaking with Brenton Faithful over there in New Zealand, and he was saying that embalming is not required over there. The person, you know, most of the people are either cremated or what we call here in America, buried with direct burial without embalming. Now, here in the United States, most of our funeral homes here, they will not allow a public viewing of the body unless the body is embalmed. They will allow the immediate family to see the body, but they won't allow a public viewing. And so, imagine if we were the same way as it was over there. I would have never seen this stuff.
If it
wasn't for the embalmers, how would we know? And when I was seeing these strange things, how would the world know? And you mentioned pathologists. I was contacted by an autopsy tech, who is somebody that works in the lab with the pathologists. He told me that he was like one out of the entire crew that refused to get a vaccine. Every other person in there was vaccinated. And he would point these clots out. So they were seeing them in the lab. But the autopsy techs, they were just calling them thrombosis or they were just saying, oh, that's just a postmortem clot. Now, this person that contacted me was also a mortician, and he's been in the business for over 30 years. He knows what normal is, but none of the doctors wanted to acknowledge it. And I would be willing to bet on a death certificate of somebody that dies unexpectedly or whatever, people aren't expecting it. And if you look at the death certificate, these things are going to be listed as either some kind of a thrombosis or an embolus. They're not going to be white fibrous clot. They're not going to be late. They're not going to investigate any further. It's just going to be a thrombus, a blood clot. They're going to label it as a clot.
Doesn't make sense from a survival instinct point of view. It doesn't make sense that you wouldn't want to look at something that. Then look, I just got to say it. I've been holding on to this for a while. Okay, and I know this will sound nuts, but if we were being invaded globally by some sort of off-world event, how would we know? We've seen leaders completely change. Jacinta Ardern turned from the humanitarian of the year to the psychopath of the year. Justin Trudeau, the guy's, you know, you're just like, what? You know, and Biden, well, just don't go there. You know, and you just, and the doctors won't look at things that are in front of their eyes. You know, and it's just nothing makes sense from a survival instinct point of view. And you do hear of like ants that get a parasite in them and they become zombie ants and it changes the behavior of the ants. And out there, people say all the time, people have changed. People have changed. At what point do you just put, look, I'm not saying it's happening, but see on the radar of possibilities, why don't we put it as a blip here that maybe, just maybe, some really bizarro Doctor Who, you, whatever you want to name it, stuff is going on, because this doesn't make any sense. Yeah. You'd think if you discovered something like these strands of calamari in people's blood, and literally you're finding it often, that the scientific world, it should be all anyone's talking about, but it's nothing. I told my dad today, he's going, what? He's never heard of it because he just watches mainstream TV. They haven't brought it up once. That doesn't make any sense. It's a new discovery. You're finding it everywhere. It should be mainstream news going, what the hell is this? Silence. Just saying.
There is a mouse. Pretty weird. There's a mouse that when it gets infected with a parasite, it loses all fear of cats. And the mice just go up to the cats, you know. Nah, 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 nah.
There you go.
And then they become part of the cat's species, and the parasite's happy because it spreads that way. So yeah, you're right. Parasites can make the host do things which are against their own survival, and that's what you're pointing out, and that's what we're seeing. The human species is currently doing stuff that just don't make any sense from a survival point of view.
You know, Michael, and what Paul's just said, you know, mixing, you know, it's not a living thing, but acts like a living thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if these things are making prion type proteins, it can coat the brain and create what's, you know, mad cow disease. And it makes it to where people don't think rationally. Their minds have gone crazy. And and so it's not necessarily the parasite, but it's these misfolded proteins and these different prion type things that is being formed. And all of the experts that I've been talking to, they all believe that the vaccine is the main culprit here. Is not they leave room for the virus itself on severe cases in some people, but the majority of this is they believe is the vaccine causing these abnormal, messed up, misfolded proteins. Which again, Dr. Paul could probably elaborate on this. If you mess up the blood of the human being, here's a good example. If you like cars, you got a nice car. It usually requires a nice high quality oil, right?
Yep.
So you sit there and you check your oil, which, you know, we're supposed to do it, but because you're really proud of your car, and even though, you know, it's probably okay, you decide to check it, and it's a half a quart low, and you don't have that engine oil ready to put in there. So what do you do? Well, I'll just go ahead and get a little bit of that olive oil from my wife's kitchen and I'll pour it in there and top it off. Now, you might can get away with that for a little while. It might not cause your car to stop. But if you keep adding olive oil into your car's motor oil, eventually you're going to start creating problems. And to the point, you could have some form of a breakdown. It might not be the engine blows up right away. It might just be one of your components of the car messes up and you got to replace it and you move on. But if you don't get that oil right, you're just going to continue to cause more and more problems. These abnormal proteins floating around in the blood could be the reason why there's, what do they say, 1,291 different side effects from the vaccine. It's the blood. The blood is the engine of our body. The Bible says that the blood is sacred. It is the life source. It's the life source. And if we're going to go into the conspiracy theory that this is about global depopulation and this is an evil scheme, and this is a war between good and evil, what is the greatest evil? Destroy the life source of God's creation. You destroy the blood. You've damaged the blood, the life source of mankind itself. And even though you put the engine cooking oil in your car, you might not feel the effect right away. But just by doing it that one time, you've probably lessened the life of that engine by some degree.
Mm. I think of that with the DNA. You know, the DNA is being impregnated now with little bits of DNA from... And to me, I think the DNA is the code of the universe. I mean, it's the code of God. It's like having the Mona Lisa, and it's just got one little stroke left to finish it, and you let kindergarten kids in to go, okay, finger paint it to finish it, you know? And you get the arrogance of the doctors that think you can do. You're insane. You're insane. We have no idea how this DNA, you know, this is... It's like in the do not touch box. Don't even go there. And instead, it's insane. The whole world is insane. And the other insanity now over here is everything's gone back to normal, and it leaves you going, no, I don't see normal. I see normal was there, and it's been shifted over here, and it's really weird. We got these blood clots, these calamari, we've got people dropping dead everywhere, and no one's talking about it. It's like, if you talk about, you can't, like over here, it's socially unacceptable to ask if someone's had a very severe reaction or they've just dropped dead. It's socially unacceptable to ask where they vaccinated. And yet when my 86-year-old father went to the cafe that he goes to every single day with my 84-year-old mum, it was okay for the 16-year-old girl to go, "You vaccinated? Can I see your passport? Can I see your license to make sure you're not..." He's 85. Yeah, he doesn't even know how to use his phone, let alone a passport, let alone fake it. You know what I mean? And yet that was allowed. And yet now, we just don't talk about it. We just don't talk about the fact that we're living in a silent, socially acceptable genocide. That's where we're living now. The death camps are all around us. They're just... Even a funeral director the other day, I was in a car, I got my mate Len here, and he's got a rash from the jab as well. And the funeral director was next to us, and this woman goes, "Hey, Michael," you know, and I'm going, and I'm looking at this empty hearse, and I said, "Are you seeing lots of deaths?" And she just went, "Pff." I said, "You want to talk?" She went, "No, that's your job." And then she took off. And I'm thinking, "Oh, thanks very much." But she admitted that she was, and we've had other funeral directors approach us. They won't speak. They're saying, "It's unbelievable. I've never seen so many deaths. They're just dropping dead, and no one talks about it." You know, country towns where they're seeing 3 or 4 car accidents a day because people are just blacking out and driving through red lights, trucks and all sorts. No one talks about it. It's all in the don't talk about it box.
Yeah, but the problem is evil can only exist when good people sit there and do nothing and say nothing. That's the only way it exists. If the people just stood up and said, "No, I'm not doing this no more," the world would turn around. They don't want us talking about it. They don't want the liability that's coming their way, but they will not be able to hide forever. The people are waking up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, unless you got some more horror stories to show.
Well, I, you I, know,
I'm really interested in setting you up with John. I'll reach out to him because I've had a few interviews with him. I love the guy. He's just a great hero. You know what I mean? And I think you two would hit it off. It'd be great to get you together, especially from Australia, England, and Alabama, just to show we're facing something globally here. And that'd be great. So I'll reach out to him. But yeah,
you could get an interesting panel. I mean, there's not enough of us speaking, to be honest. No. And there's not enough doctors standing up. There's a bunch of they are starting to wake up. But I'm hearing doctors now. I was talking to a gentleman who cornered one of the doctors he knew, and he's like, why is it that every time I try to bring up this COVID vaccine, nobody wants to talk to me about it? And he was reluctant to answer him. And his final response was, we can't talk about it because that would make us liable for what has happened. They'd have to admit what they see. The doctors, there are still a handful of doctors that are still pushing this. I sometimes think they just don't have a conscience. My previous doctor may be being one of them.
They're still doing it here.
It's got to be the same there.
Yeah, there's posters up everywhere. Get your COVID vaccine. It's in the newspapers. There's a festival, a country and Western festival going up. They want to know your vaccination status. Still going on. Like nothing's happened. Like these people aren't dying. Like it's baffling. Baffling, you know?
And now you know how easy it was for Nazi Germany when they were loading the people up and taking them off to the camps. How easy that happened because people just sat there and just went along with it.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they plan to shut down all the sort of discourse next time around so that they can more efficiently hide what the deaths. So now is the time to put the fire out because people are dying. People are dying in numbers that we previously saw during war. And to say that everything's fine, you know, that's like those memes of the mutton sitting in a burning room and going, oh, everything's fine. That's how we feel. And we'll continue to ask the questions and seek accountability. And I know the doctors don't want to face the idea that their ship is sinking and that they may be held liable, but because the government ultimately will throw this back on the doctors and say it was your responsibility, doctor, to give informed consent. So they're going to offload it on the doctors, and then fun and games, right? This will come out.
We have this thing here as a symbol of the movement too. Before we go, 8:32. It's from the Bible, from John. You shall know the truth and the truth will make you free. Because we're looking for a symbol to join us all. And so there's every time we interview someone from overseas, we say put it somewhere just so we can unite our tribe, like our motivation. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why a lot of times on my ex posts, I'll put on there, seek truth and God, be kind and try to do what is right. These doctors, if they don't wake up, they've got to see the writing on the wall. Rishi Sunak said it. Oh, we're only listening to the doctors and the medical expert scientists. He's throwing out there, telling them they're going to try to pin this on the doctors. If the doctors sit there in silence, they will be blamed. I mean, they've got to stand up. I believe a lot of people were lied to, and I believe a lot of people thought they were doing good. I don't believe everybody was evil. What's evil is trying to hide the truth of what's happening and then continuing on with this this massive vaccination pushing, you're adding more and more olive oil to your engine. I mean, why are we doing this? If it didn't work, it was experimental. I don't understand. They can pull other drugs off the market for a few small minor events, but this one here, you've got thousands and thousands and the excess deaths, and that they do not want to admit or even look at the possibility of that, that vaccine is what caused it. We've got politicians over here in the United States. You know, our senators are in our congressmen exempted themselves from the vaccine mandates. They didn't have to get the vaccine. I know a lady by the name of Laura Kasner, who sat there and brought one of these vials to two of her state senators, sat down with them and had lunch with them and talked to them with a three-ring binder of all of the side effects from these vaccines. And these two senators said, oh, they didn't get vaccinated, nor did they vaccinate their families. It's almost like they said, like they already knew of this. And my thought is, where were you defending your people, the constituents? You guys were elected and put up there in positions of power to represent us. And yet you allowed companies to mandate these experimental vaccines. You exempted yourselves and you did nothing for your people. I don't want that blood on my head, but unfortunately, I'm afraid the blood is already on their head.
Sure. You could say God's judgment will come. It's not for me to judge. I know people were propagandized and perhaps mind controlled in different ways. But judgment is coming one form or another. Because if all the stuff we're talking about, even if some of it is real, a reckoning will have to happen. And I'm trying to be as patient as possible. I've been on the bandwagon for, you know, nearly 4 years now. So it will come. It will come. And as you said before, people just have to speak what they're seeing, speak the truth as best as they know it, because we don't know everything. I don't claim to know anything. I'm just, I believe what I see and what I observe in the world around me, and I think it's time. I mean, I am becoming impatient, but reckoning is coming, including for my colleagues.
At least you know what the big words mean. That's true. You know, but yeah, it's extraordinary time, and it's I'm not as convinced yet. I see just people adapting to it. It's like, just humans are great adapters. I'm actually beginning to think, we had a big discussion the last few days, that even, say, America, I see America as a great bastion of freedom. You really redefined what it was to be a free society when they won the War of Independence and they put it together, a whole country. But I think that there was only a small percentage that did that. I think there's a lot of people out there that just go, oh, I'm in a free country, great. I'm in a, I'm in a dictatorship, great. They just adapt. They don't care. Wherever they are, they'll make do. There's only a few like yourself, Richard, and Paul here that actually go, no, we have to fight for the deep values of what it is to be a human, what it is to be free, what it is to be Christian, whatever. And there's only a few of us. There's only a few warriors. And I think there's only ever been a few warriors. And the rest, like in that famous film, The Magnificent Seven, the rest are just farmers. They just go back and, you know, the Lodi react when literally they're starving and when they have no other choice, then maybe they'll rise. If there's any way out of conflict, they'll take that route. And so I am not as convinced yet that we're close to a reckoning. You know, I think that's wishful thinking.
Well, you might be right.
But let's see. I hope I'm wrong. I've been hoping I'm wrong ever since I joined this movement. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's stages of grief. And one of the stages in the beginning of the grief process, one of them is a denial. There's a denial, a great denial. And I think that's where we are. What I'm afraid is coming, though, is the anger stage, when the world wakes up and realizes what's happened. And you, I believe you, Michael, you're absolutely right. There are so many people that are not willing to stand up and speak. It is those people that are standing up and speaking and those people that are willing to get up and fight, which is going to be the future of anything. I mean, we didn't get our freedom for nothing. It takes people to stand up and do what's right. When that anger stage takes place, it's going to be interesting to see where that anger goes out. And I believe these globalists, they're trying to push and coerce the people into wars, whether it's with China, Ukraine, Russia, whatever. It doesn't matter. To them, it doesn't matter. That's why they want the vaccinated to hate the unvaccinated, why they want the white people to not like these people or those people not like these. Right, they're continually trying to stir us up when in all reality, you know, if we just lay down our arms and say, hey, you know what? We're all people. Why are we allowing this hatred to stir each other up by buying into their propaganda and hating one another and staying divided? We destroy ourselves. Mm. But if we can love one another, support one another, and realize who it is turning these or creating these storms, then we can stand against them as a united people. And I think that's their greatest fear, is that we will wake up and they will have nowhere to run and hide.
It's interesting when you talk about that love. Over here in Melbourne, we have trams. And I've always said the trams show the way people love, because you can have people of all different races, all different ages, all different genders, and yet a pregnant woman comes on with a pram and someone will come and help her on with the pram. An old lady gets on, or an old man, or a pregnant woman, someone will stand up. Doesn't matter who, stand up and have a seat. We care for each other without even subconsciously, we just do it. And we're not sitting on the tram fighting each other because of our differences. We're just in our own world hanging out with each other as we head in a direction to where we're going. That is what the love is. We don't want to hate and fight and kill each other. We just want to live our lives in peace and offer the same peace to our brothers and sisters, because it's better for us if we're all just doing our thing. That's the form of love that we want, you know. And they try to shake up this tram, so we're going, hey, you, old man, get off my seat. You know, that's what they want, and that's what they propagate. No, it's, yeah, so I saw that with the Lord of the Flies.
So long as we have the truckers and the farmers on our side, we can, you know, we can change the world, and the farmers are fed up, and it takes a lot to get them moving in big numbers through Europe now. And we need them, because I like eating.
Me too.
Well, you're growing your own calamari now. You don't have to go out. Can't believe I just said that.
I'm not hungry enough yet, Michael.
Yeah. I might become a vegetarian.
Within, you know, Bill Gates' the artificial meat business, that they're really tumors. You know, they're what they call the artificial meat is like cancer steak. I'd like my steak medium rare, you know. I mean, it's between insects and tumor, pieces of tumor. Please save us.
Agreed. Agreed. Anyway, I have to go. Thank you so much for coming on, Richard. I'll be in touch. I'd really love to get you on. I think these are actually healthy conversations to have, especially as it shows we've never met before. We're from this shows how we get on. This is a form of love. This is how we get on. Human beings just like to get on. There's a famous book called The Lord of the Flies, which says you leave humans alone, they just rip each other to shreds. I actually don't believe that. I think if we believe that, we wouldn't have got this far as a species. You look at India, generally people, you get further and you achieve your goals better if more people are working together. And so that's, I think that's our natural way. So yeah, great to meet you. Really, thank you.
It's been cool. Great to meet you too, both of you.
I'll get this up on Sunday morning. I'll just stop the recording now. Is there anything you want to say to Australians before you leave? Don't mention seafood, but anything you want to mention before you leave?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, the only thing that I'd like to say is seek the truth and in hopes you find God, and be kind and just try to do what is right.
8:32, brother.
8:32.
Street sweeper sweeps away the broken at dawn. The souls without hope, forgotten forlorn. As leaves fall gently like jaded ballerinas, dancing on the prey and saying, Lord, can't you hear us? Angels sigh from the afterlife that a man laying flowers at the feet of AI, as his mother cries for the child that was, and the satellites prey upon the soon to be gone. Lord, 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 we're falling apart. What was that gift you gave us to heal our hearts? Why do ambulances rush in eerie silence, with lights flashing hard but muted sirens? And what is this fuse burning deep inside? I'm sick all the time, but they tell me I'm fine. Lord, 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 we're falling apart. What was that gift you gave us to heal our hearts? Oh, Lord, how long till you return? Stay strong through it all. Street sweeper sweeps away the broken at dawn. The souls without hope, forgotten forlorn. Is our deal still to be saved or forsaken? I believe that it is, but I could be mistaken. Lord, 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 we're falling apart. What was that gift you gave us to heal our hearts? Lord, 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 we're falling apart. What was that gift you gave us to heal our hearts? Stay strong.